Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy retired aviator, writing most recently at the National Review Online about sea power states, sea power in the 21st century. But we begin with a history lesson. The book is Sea Power States, Maritime Culture, Continental Empires, and the Conflict That Made the Modern World by Andrew Lambert, Professor Andrew Lambert, who was Jerry's thesis advisor, and also a man who's esteemed for doing the history of why sea power is important, especially for peace in the world, for the last 2,000 years or more. Jerry, a very good evening to you. It is wonderful to consider that I can open my National Review online and be taken back to Tyre and Phoenicia and Carthage. But it's important to illustrate what Professor Lambert means by sea power states and continental states. What is the difference? Good evening to you, Jerry.
Good evening, John, and it's great to be on with you. And it's great, actually, to have written. Dr. Lambert was my dissertation advisor and director, and of course, my book on to provide and maintain a Navy in many ways was a response to his book. And now to kind of be able to amplify on this with this new National Review essay. But the difference between continental powers and sea powers is very distinct. Continental powers tend to look at the acquisition of power through the acquisition of territory and resources. So their idea of generating both power and wealth is by acquiring additional land or the resources that go with them. And so Andrew lays out within his book the sort of the ancient empires like the Persians or the Chinese or even up through the French were very much about the acquisition of land territory as a means of gaining additional control, whereas sea powers are about sort of generating wealth through commerce on the sea. And so whether it was Tyre or whether it was Carthage or Venice or ultimately the United Kingdom, it was about small or medium nations being able to generate great power status by building essentially commercial trading empires. And what's interesting about that is that land or continental powers had a great fear of sea powers because sea powers brought with them radical ideas like free trade or the free seas, and land powers traditionally had a real problem with the concept of freedom. So this is sort of the lesson that came out of Dr. Lambert's book, and it's something that I wanted to speak about here in the modern sense because the United States really was a child of the Enlightenment and the idea that free trade and the free seas were foundational concepts that informed the idea of individual freedom and that found expression here in the U.S. Society, culture, and our laws and norms.
Let's go to the 18th century to a tidewater planter named George Washington. He recognized that the U.S., the United States as he conceived it, had a peculiar destiny because of the ocean. Were we understood as a sea power by the founders, Jerry?
Well, I'm not sure that they would use the term sea power, but they understand that the United States, especially in its birth, was a trading nation, and it was a nation that traded across the seas. And so whether you were a southern agrarian state or whether you were a northern mercantilist state, you were building or exporting resources, and you wanted to ship those to Europe. You wanted to send that to advanced markets in Europe and then to buy even more advanced goods there to bring back to the United States. So a wealthy farmer like George Washington, he would send his tobacco over to the United Kingdom or even to France, and then in return he would bring finished goods back to be able to decorate Mount Vernon. So he understood that sea trade and free trade was important to the United States and that it was an eastward-looking nation that looked across the Atlantic, which is why, if you look at the founding documents in the U.S. Constitution, that there's a requirement in the Constitution in Article 1, Section 8, that the Congress provide and maintain a Navy, whereas the land component was only to be raised and then supported, meaning the land power was viewed as being episodic while sea power was enduring. And so all of the founders understood this at our birth, that we really were a sea power nation, even if they didn't use that term in the documents at the time.
As a continental power, we are blessed with a very good and close ally to the north, Canada, and an equally good and reliable ally to the south, Mexico. So it has never been necessary for us to patrol our borders in a fashion that would be consistent with Europe. However, Jerry, I want to come to the 20th century. The ability of the U.S. to fight two wars, the Pacific and the Atlantic, at the same time, was that a function of the, I know the answer to this question, Army, Navy, or the Army Air Force? Who managed the two wars at the same time, Jerry?
Well, obviously, you know, I never want to deny the importance of our sister services. The Army fought very hard and was deeply invested in both campaigns, both in Europe and in the Asia-Pacific region. However, it was the Navy that enabled and allowed the Army to be able to reach the two continents, whether it was traveling the Atlantic to land in Europe or if it was being able to control and get sea control over the Pacific for the Army and the Marine Corps to be able to island hop as we moved out of Australia all the way up through until we finally were able to subdue Japan. But the fact is that the Navy was the key enabler. It was the thing that opened the doors for both campaigns, and it was important that we have sea control and establish that early in order to successfully prosecute a two-ocean war for World War II. So again, the Army was important, but ultimately, you know, my view was that the Navy was the key enabler that allowed the Army to sort of seal the deal.
Yes, because it was Japan, Imperial Japan, that believed that the ocean would be a buffer and that the fortified islands would block the U.S. Navy's counterattack. That did not happen. But let's come to the Cold War. In the Cold War, we did not fight a battle comparable to what we did in the Second War. Was the Navy important to defeating the Soviets? The Soviets are strictly a continental power. How did the Navy function in the Cold War, Jared?
So again, I'll start by being fair and stating that the U.S. Army was located in South Korea. You know, we fought a major war there. We also fought a war in Vietnam, a very large component, land component aspect of those. And the U.S. Army was forward based in Europe all the way through the Cold War. However, it was really the pressure of the Ronald Reagan buildup of the 600-ship Navy and then the active exercising of that Navy in the North Atlantic and also in the Northern Pacific against the Soviet Union that in many ways, historians looking back now, beginning and looking at some of the exercises of 1983 through 1986, that we feel in many ways cracked the Soviet Union, raised the doubts within their own mind, made them realize that they were never going to be able to outspend or outcompete the capabilities of the United States, and that really brought about the end of the Cold War in 1989 through 1990. So I think that the Navy, as an active agent of influence, the way that it's able to project power ashore, project influence from offshore, is a major component of the victory of the Cold War.
I want to speak to the submariners, Jerry, because it's my reading of the Cold War that it was the submarine fleet, the attack fleet, and the boomers, the missile fleet, that guaranteed that the U.S. wasn't going to suffer a sneak attack. Is that too general, or is that the way the Navy thought about it, its contribution to nuclear defense?
Well, I think that I wouldn't understate what the submarine community did. I mean, the fact that we had fast attack submarines, attack submarines that were in trail behind Soviet Union ballistic missile submarines or even their fast attack submarines throughout the 1970s, 80s, bringing up to that put pressure on them, the fact that they could not get away from us, and the fact that our ballistic missile submarines with that assured second nuclear strike capability could not be tracked. That was something that sort of drove them a little bit nuts. But at the same time, the surging of the Second Fleet with carrier strike groups, high into the North Atlantic to operate in and around the Norwegian fjords during 1983 and 84. That also brought pressure to bear when they saw that we were able to launch and recover our airplanes in the high north, fly missions in towards their borders, letting them know that we could reach them at any time that we want to. That was also a big part of the final decision by them to sort of, it pressurized them to the point that they effectively collapsed.
All right, we've come up right to the end of the 20th century, and the Soviet Union is in the dustbin. However, we're in the 21st century, and when we come back, why America must be a sea power up against the adversaries of the People's Republic of China and the Russian Federation. Jerry Hendricks, Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy, aviator, retired, writing at the National Review Online. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.